Oh, my absolute favorite. On the Hammond B3, there are only two people I just love. Jimmy Smith, that you're just hearing now, with the title track of his 1958 album, The Sermon, is one of them, and the other is my girl. She was married to Stanley Turrentine, as a matter of fact. Great organist, and we should get to know more of their music. You know, it's just amazing to me that we had such privilege being accessible to their music at one time, and many people are growing up or have grown up not knowing anything about them. So on this, we have Lee Morgan on trumpet, Lou Donaldson on alto sax, Tina Brooks on tenor sax, Kenny Burrell, who passed not too long ago, on guitar, and Art Blakey on drums. As a starving student, I paid a lot of money for this album and loaned it to a friend. I never saw it again. That was just such a great loss. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And just as we start out, let me give you the numbers that you can use for today. It is, of course, our regular one of them. There are two. One is our standard historic number of 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And there is a new number as well that would help us accommodate traffic, and that is 646-922-8391. 646-922-8391. Well, you know, Washington continues with the madness, and frankly, I think it is so embarrassing. It is so embarrassing for this country that a leading nation of the world, this is where we are. It is murky, it is messy, people are fighting, we have a renegade president, and he, in turn, has brought on a band of renegades that are together, they're doing their own thing, whatever it is they want to do. The nation is being run as a kind of mom-and-pop shop. It's not being run by professionals who understand how you run a country. They're doing whatever it is they want to do. And then the opposition. I don't know what happened here. I used to, you know, jokingly call her Mother Dearest, Nancy Pelosi. But it seemed as if everybody's just sitting around waiting to get word from her as what she finds acceptable. You're there to do a job. Many of them have been in Washington for decades. They know what's going wrong in the nation. And there is, you know, there's a lot of meetings being scheduled and hearings and probes and investigations, and we're moving nowhere. And it's more confusion. But throughout the confusion, we see the pattern. The pattern is to distract the nation. Take their focus and put it on something else. While the president and his gang, and I don't think it's a wrong word to use here, they do what they want. Free from scrutiny and accountability. They're cutting all kinds of deals. And the deals, quote unquote, which is a stupid word to use now, make a deal. Let's make a deal. This is a country. You have dealings with other countries. You don't cut deals. That's the mindset of a gangster, of a lowlife. Let's make a deal. Not when it comes to a country. You enter into negotiations and you come out with agreements. You come out with some kind of rapprochement, but you don't come out with deals. That's the level the president has brought us to, that these words and the attitudes, people meeting in secret, and there's no longer a need to observe, even symbolically, the idea of fidelity to country. Because when you're talking about money and the greed that accompanies it, and you're talking about underhanded people, and you see how they've run even their own businesses, there is no pledge of allegiance to principle and to, you know, observing good form. It's about the money. And in that regard, we deal with anybody who wants a deal, because much of the world has been converted to this kind of thinking. That they're not running countries. And that means that they have to have an entirely different attitude. They are like shysters and businessmen, and not even good ones. Because it used to be, not too long ago, when countries are dealing with each other, there's a lot that comes with that. Because it is understood each country is accountable to its people. And in making these arrangements with other countries, there's a whole set of laws and history that they ought to observe and honor and obey, so that whatever it is they're doing can at least not, you know, stink to the high heavens of underhanded deals, as they call them. Is the right word. It's a deal. That's not the way countries are accustomed to dealing with each other. Used to have systems that govern how countries interact with each other. What is the arrangement? How do the people fit in? We have no say. They tell us what they've done, if we're lucky, if we are that privileged to know. They'll tell us what has happened, what they've done after they've done it. And you could see how accurate a reading they have. Donald Trump, his administration, his family, they have an accurate reading with all things said and done. We're not going to do anything to them. We pose no threat to them. We just have to wait. If they choose to let us know, they'll tell us some of what they have done. But by now we should fully suspect that the number one priority of this president is not the country. The number one priority of this president is his personal survival and the survival of his family, money-wise. He is looking to set up a system where his great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren and several other generations will be accounted for, will be provided for in all these various ways. If he should check out tomorrow, the number one priority is survival on that level, which means you must pursue a lot of money and get it. You're pursuing assets because your life depends on it, and this is your plan depends on it. Squirreling away assets all over the place so that five generations or more from now, everybody is in good shape. You don't care what you have to destroy. You don't care what you do, how you mash up decades and decades of forthright dealings with other countries and even with the citizens of this country. Americans are not being told the truth about anything. Even the ones who, go crazy with their red hats and make America great again and so forth, they are clueless about what this president is doing that is going, in the end, to cost them. Maybe not today, but it will happen. So we have to ask ourselves, it's one thing that we do a lot. It is easy to point fingers and say, well, this is what the government is doing wrong. It is easy to point fingers at the systems of social, political, and economic control and blame them for the mess that we are in. But are we, the people, falling short in our duty to safeguard our interests and to safeguard what we talk all the time about, democracy in the United States? That's a question. Where do you draw the line in terms of culpability here in the management and mismanagement of this country? Who's to blame? It's easy to point a finger and say, okay, well, this government stinks. All right. Got it. Now, where do you fit in the scheme of things as a citizen, as a responsible citizen? I've already discussed with you that the number one objective we ought to have, and this comes out of a unique history in this country, of certain people in this country. You have a unique history, and you'd be crazy to dismiss it. You'd be crazy to kind of unconsciously lump it with everybody's history and call it the American history. It's not, it doesn't work like that. We have unique experiences. And those unique experiences ought to tell us something. Those unique experiences are instructions for how we are to behave as, quote, responsible people, responsible Americans. They issue no apology for what they do. If you're waiting for Donald Trump to say he's truly sorry he has done A, B, C, D, and E, and the 4,000 other things that, would appear on this list of confession, it's not going to happen. We, when you look at it carefully, you see the country in this short period of time devolving back into the apartheid country this was. All kinds of delineations are being made and have been made, and we have quietly fit into them. We're not quarreling. We grumble at some things that are being done, and when they get outrageous, we find our attitudes and opinions being reflected in the House, especially. But look objectively at the situation. The apparatus of government and governance are well at home with what's happening in America today. Racism is back. Racist rule is back. We have the delineation of the haves versus the have-nots. Who is deserving? We have the apparatus of government openly endorsing the view that the rich deserve more, the poor deserve more poverty and distress. There's no real attempt at bridging the gap. They're done with that. That is not part of the agenda. That's why it's not discussed. Because it's already concluded that we are reverting to a time of real America, real white America, and how it was run. It's crude and in your face. They don't have to remind us every day. We already, in just 2 years, we got the message. And worse, we have adjusted very well to it. So this, and it's now being globalized. Again, the re-globalization of racism. Big countries are collecting small countries like little prizes And they're still doing the same thing. Whatever it is we want, that's what we're going to do. What are you going to do? You got planes, you have bombers, you have warships. The nations of the world, in so many ways, are behaving like thugs. The sad part is that the nations that they are targeting are behaving like willing victims. We're cooperating. So, in a way, people would say, I'm reading this whole thing wrong. If people were dissatisfied, we would see the dissatisfaction playing out, but we're not seeing, we're hearing rumbles. We're hearing the gripes that people have, but we're not seeing any muscle behind it. So it must mean that the level of distress is not that high, at least not yet. Or it means that the pressures that they are under, they have grown to manage and tolerate very well. So I'm asking the question today, where are we, the people, in all of this? Are we that dissatisfied that we also break the rules? They're breaking the rules. Donald Trump, in pursuit of his personal wealth, and when I say his, I mean his family, his dominion's wealth, is breaking rule after rule after rule. Congress is doing the same. Members of Congress, especially those about to retire, they're breaking all kinds of rules. They've got to amass wealth before they go, and they have to set themselves up for the afterlife. After they leave Congress, does that mean they lose interest in making money? No. They're setting it up now. So that, in a sense, it becomes almost a technicality as to whether they are physically in Congress or not. They've already established their systems that will predictably give them the kind of money, income, lifestyle that they think they're entitled to. And that's what government is for, giving them access to these systems, giving them access to laws and things that they can do while they are in Congress. It works out very, very well for them. It never works out that way for the people. We, the people, get shafted, both before and after the deal in office. Okay. So could you explain, and this is the task today, could you explain where we, the people, are in the scheme of things, when it comes to this idea that we are supposed to be playing a critical role, and that is safeguarding democracy? Because in safeguarding democracy, we adhere to a long touted benefit, which is that the citizens also have a role to play in maintaining democracy. And so we don't have these kinds of outrageous inequalities existing because we have a say. And we insist on having a say. We have more than a say, we have a duty to safeguard our rights. Can you interpret for us, or could you provide any idea or guidance on how we deal with this question as citizens? Are we truly a part of this government and the governmental process? Or is something else happening here? And we have adjusted and still are adjusting so well to being dismissed from our constitutional role in maintaining a democratic process in this country. What say you? Let me remind you, there are two phone numbers apart from the 888-874-4888 number. We have another number that you can call, 646-922-8391. All right. Ed from New York gets us started today. Hello, Ed.
Hey, hello, Yatrice. How are you?
Okay.
It was good seeing you that Sunday. It was a good session. It was invigorating. But
I think so too. And I was happy to see your face in the place.
Thank you very much. But to the subject at hand for today that you posed, yes, the people have abrogated their right to participate and to be an influence that this government should fear. The public officials should fear the people. And the people have just abrogated their rights, whether it be through ignorance, whether it be through complacency, whether it be through acceptance. Like that old scientific experiment, if you take a frog and put him in a pot of boiling water, he'll jump right out. But if you take a frog and put him in a pot of tepid water and slowly raise the heat, he'll boil to death because he'll adapt. And that's what's happened to the American people. We have adapted, you know, and it's a blanket indictment. Donald Trump is the result of saturation of corruption. But this started with Reagan when I was a child, what Reagan was doing, and it's been going on, and incrementally people have become to adjust to the fact that, yes, the system is corrupt, and we have no say or no ability, and we accept it. And around the world, you're not seeing in China, in Venezuela, people are getting out in the streets. They're protesting. They're fighting. And that's what's got to happen. And it's not happening. I don't even know if the American people have the ability to do that anymore, if they have the ability to organize. And it's getting to a point to where it's going to be too little too late, I'm afraid. Not to be so pessimistic, but if it continues at this rate, there won't be anything left. I mean, from an environmental standpoint, by 2050, the effects of climate change will be irreversible. Politically speaking, we've got a criminal enterprise in the White House, and nobody seems to be that upset to say it's just completely and totally violating all decorum and laws and filling his pockets. And around the world, I mean, even in different countries where there's been conspiracies against leaders, and it's all coming to a head. And something's got to give. But I don't know if the American
people... Some people might say, Ed, that the absence of people in the streets, as in other countries like France and Venezuela and others, is testament to the way of how well the government is working, that people aren't feeling distressed. They aren't feeling deprived. They're not feeling that they are victims of the government, that they seem to be okay with the way things are going. What do you say to that?
Well, I put it to you like this. I'm an amateur student of history, and I don't believe you can go forward unless you look at what has happened in the past. And there were two periods of time in this country, specifically, where there was going to be a revolution of sorts as far as how the system ran. The Great Depression and the watershed moments in the 1960s and early 70s. And I believe that the powers that be focused on those two points in society, and they set upon a plan to sedate the people in education, in entertainment. I mean, look at, just try for an example. Everybody has a cell phone. Everybody has the ability to program in, to tune in, and tune out. Everybody has the ability to put themselves in their own separate bubble. Everybody, you know, I mean, there's no more intellectual thought. I mean, I can disagree with somebody, but years ago you could sit down and have a conversation and have a debate. Now it's all emotion. Now it's all juvenile thought. Now there's no depth to people anymore. And when you lose that depth, you lose the ability to be compassionate. You lose the ability to have empathy. And that's what motivates people. When you can commiserate and find a commonality with each other, that's what motivates people. And the intelligence has been dumbed out of the American people, in my opinion, to the point to where we just react. We just react. We just react. And no one has any forethought to really organize, to really set up something substantial for the future. And that's what happened. And that's what the powers that be wanted. They wanted to nullify the public. And it's successful. And it's going to take a shockwave to get us out of it.
Do you sense an uprising is in the making?
I used to, but now I'm not so sure. I mean, there are little sporadic outbursts here and there. There's a group that I'm involved with that showed some potential, but now it seems to be lacking. Like I said, it's a long time ago somebody told me, you know, some people act, some people react. And people that react don't think. Something happens and they react to it. People that act think. And there's an absence of people that have the ability to think constructively and act. They just react. And reaction is reaction. When you react, you're a victim because you're responding to circumstances that are presented against you instead of taking control of the circumstances and making them beneficial to yourself. We've got a bunch of reactors. We don't have any actors anymore.
Well, thank you, Ed, for getting us started today and getting us started so well today.
Thank you
for your contribution. 888-874-4888 or 646-922-8391. Oh, I know it's getting serious because David is calling. Hello, David, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Nutrice.
Hello.
I want to put it plain and simple. As someone put it to me one day, the country is run by the rich people and they make the decisions. When you talk about the word democracy, you're talking about illusion. This country has never, ever been a democracy. At one time, it started off sort of like a republic, but now it's past that. It's an oligarchy. The point is, the place is run for the interests of the people at the very top at the expense of the people on the bottom. Now, why do we have this illusion that we live in a democracy? You know, the propaganda is very good. The ruling group, the ruling class, the oligarchs at the top, they control everything, all the information that people get from corporate media, usually newspapers, radio and television. They control the schools, the type of textbooks that children have. And that's part of the game, just like the title of my book, Playing the Game, that goes from kindergarten through graduate school. There's no democracy here. If it was democracy, the whole country would be run for the benefit of the people who live here. You wouldn't have a situation where most of the benefits go to those at the top and a significant number of people are poor. So, people throw around the term democracy very loosely, and that's all it is. But it's not a democracy. It's an oligarchy that runs for the interests of the people at the top at the expense of the people at the bottom. Now, one of the things about the oligarchy that it works very good here for them who run it is they have a lot of African people here that were kidnapped in Africa and brought here and enslaved, and most of them worked to death. And never have been really free. The 13th Amendment did not free the slaves, so to speak. It just changed from one form of slavery to another. So, and they can use this reason of having these people with the darker phenotype from Africa against the people with the lighter phenotype that's like them to play people against each other. And they are masters of it. I mean, it is wonderful how the ruling class is so smart. They are masters of diverting attention from the issues that would benefit people to having people's attention put on all kinds of other things to get them away from the truth of the matter, which this is place is not a democracy. It's not designed politically, economically, or in any way designed to benefit the people who are living here. And, people have to get that through their head. And they are so good at it that most people don't understand how the game is being played against them. They have no clue. But yet again, in this case, the people at the top, most of them have European phenotype. They're sort of pink skin and whatnot. So they can get other people who are not in that group, that's the masses of the so-called white people, to identify with them as long as they can until they don't want to do it anymore, and then they will go and even hurt those people. So this is a matter of manipulating people. The old classical thing of divide and conquer, that is king. Divide and conquer, and that's how you play the game. Now, the only way to change this is when they go too far and make the people suffer too much, then they're in danger. But they have a technique for doing that by doing other things. For example, when they are making people suffer and they see it's dangerous, that's when they throw out the bones. You throw out bones, you throw out a little Social Security, you throw out some other things, and when you can, and people do not look like they're going to rebel anymore, then you take those things back. And that's what's happening in this country. So until the masses of people get it, things are going to continue as they have been. And we have to understand that. The people have to get that together. The little white people who are suffering now have to understand that they are being played just like all the rest of the people in the country. So this idea, this propaganda about democracy and make America get great again, that's all nonsense. That's a way to divert attention from the real issue, that makes people suffer here and poor from the real issue, which is the rule of the oligarchs that run the country.
Do you think people are prepared to accept your analysis as a correct analysis?
Well, here's the situation. People are so incredibly brainwashed that it's kind of difficult to accept an analysis like that. I mean, this idea of democracy is drummed into their heads so much, it's going to take, I think, more suffering from people to get what the game is about. It's just so hard for people to do that. When you throw out the bones and you give some people more in terms of more bones than others, and you play all these games and you divert attention, and I mean, the ruling class is brilliant. They have all these techniques that they use to play people. And I think it's not an easy task, but the task has to be accomplished. And that is, to me, the major thing that has to be done. That people have to perhaps suffer a little more. But when they're suffering a little more, what I'm saying is the ruling class sees that. They take the temperature. They get out there to mob it and say, well, we got to do something here. So we throw out a few bones, and we'll even give the phenotype white people a few more bones, and that'll get them on more on our side, even though we're not with them, that have them think that we are. And, you know, that seems to work with a lot of people. So I think that it is a Herculean task to do that, but it can be done. But we can't keep voting for the duopoly that we have here, you know, these so-called Republicans and so-called Democrats that run the whole show. They're one group. And we have to understand that these people are not on our side. This is not a democracy that benefits for the good of the masses of people who live here. And until we understand that you can't live in a country where over half the federal budget goes into war making. I mean, that's ridiculous, and people don't get that. But I've talked to so many people who, they go to the day when they have the big Veterans Day and look at the jet planes flying overhead that cost millions and millions of dollars to operate and don't benefit the people living here and benefit the imperial policy of the ruling class. That's all it does. You know, threaten and bully smaller nations all over the world. And if you're an empire and you're running oligarchy and an empire at the same oligarchy here and an empire overseas to control the resources of the people overseas, then you're going to have half the budget here spent on military armament. So it's not an easy task to get people who are so incredibly brainwashed and have no understanding of how things really run here. So getting people to understand that is not an easy task in answering your question, I would say, It's very hard, but I don't give up.
Well, that's good. Thank you, David. A really profound answer to the question. 888-874-4888, our traditional number. We have a special number, too, that has been added, 646-922-8391. You see, at some point, well, David insists that too many people are not getting it. And that, of course, is carefully choreographed so that we have a nation disinclined or not inclined to really look at things in a clinical way, because chances are if they do, they will find the truth, which is totally different from what they're told. But we have to ask ourselves, well, wait a minute, where do I fit into all of this? Apart from being a target, where do I fit? What on the other side of the line that is being drawn, what is there for me to do? What can I do within, you know, my area of responsibility? What is it that I'm supposed to do? How can I advance the cause of responsible citizenship? And responsible citizenship means you keep tabs on the conduct of the government. You watch and monitor the behavior of the government. And by behavior, I mean, what is the government doing on a day-to-day basis? And what is the fallout? You can't tell me that we're doing so well. And everywhere you go, even in the hip cities, you're seeing more and more hopelessness, more and more homelessness, more and more helplessness. People out of work. You're seeing crucial resources like education. You're seeing where these resources are being directed. And you're seeing the consistent application of policy to yield a consistent result, which is massive inequality, a yawning gap between rich and poor, between whites and everybody else. And we see an obscene, that's the only word I could think of it, it's obscene. The level of propaganda we are subjected to every single day to have us believe that the United States at this very point is at the peak of accomplishment, doing very well, producing good things for its citizens, being a good neighbor to others outside of the hemisphere, and even in this hemisphere. Many things are wrong, and disturbingly wrong. So at some point, my original question when I drafted this question was, are we looking at an uprising in the United States? Is that what it's going to take to get this issue understood about how you run a country, what is acceptable and what is not acceptable, where you have 95% of the power in this area and the rest of the people, well, they barely, you know, they should have at least 5%, but they don't. What they say they want, well, it's just not listened to. John from New Jersey, what are you thinking?
I think that I'm surprised that I can think, given all of the propaganda that's been pushed into my head since I was a little kid. I think that anybody steps out of line, they end up going down the trail of JFK, his brother, Martin Luther King, even people like John Lennon, who had dared to question what's going on in this country. That's what I think. And I think that when those planes fly over Giant Stadium, one of these days, they're going to let the napalm bomb go because they don't like us. They want to take care of us. They want to wipe us all out as fast as they can. And that's about sums it up for me. You have a good afternoon. Bye.
But, John, before you go, I want you to answer this question. You're clear about the faults of the agencies and the individuals charged with governance. What about the people? What is their power?
It's going to be everybody for themselves. You cannot organize. It's not like we can keep it. They're the only ones that have secrets. We don't have secrets. The second we try to organize, they will come down on us like the fascists they are. Jack Buddha's booting us to death. That's what they will do. They have these weapons now they'll cook you, you know, from a mile away. A whole crowd of people there. Microwave weapons. It's all about killing as many people as they can so that they can take over the world completely and do exactly what they want with it and hell and be damned with everyone else. That's what I think.
So you don't see the possibility of the people, you know, that segment, we the people in the United States resolve to be actively involved in this business of democracy. This is also our job. This is also our duty.
Oh, I do, but you can't do it within the system. The system is rigged, to quote Mr. Trump. Who knows better about it than he does? You got me off track here. It's done. It's over. We can't change this. Can't change. The only way you can change it is at the point of a gun. That's the way they do it, and that's the only thing they understand. My humble opinion.
But if it were to happen, let's just conjecture for a minute. If it
I'm
could
looking
happen,
over my shoulder right now because I'm talking to you about this.
Oh.
Go ahead, sorry.
But if it could happen, and if it were to happen, what would be, in your view, what would be the conditions prevailing at the time that these things happen where the people take more power in the business of running this country?
Well, I mean, if the people didn't uprise after 2008 and we ended up bailing out the rich people, the banks, the insurance companies, oil companies, we ended up bailing out with our hard-earned tax money. You know, nobody asked us what we wanted to do with the tax money. They just did what they wanted to do with it. You know, it makes me wonder, where is all that money that was collected to help the people of Haiti go? Where is that? You know what the mistake was? George W. Bush and Bill Clinton were put in charge of it. That's what the mistake was. That's where people looked around and said, where's all that money? It's a joke to even consider that we could, that this is a democracy, and to the republic for which it stands. It doesn't say, and to the democracy for which it stands. It's a joke. It's a joke, and it's on us. What did one of my favorite comedians said? It's a big club, and you ain't in it. And that's the way it is. So I got to go. I'm getting all nervous here now, you know?
No, but you did a splendid job. And you did.
Your play is flying over.
And you offered us some sober thoughts. And I thank you, John, for calling in and contributing today. Thank you so much. We have to not just start thinking about these things, we have to talk about these things. And we have to, I guess the best word I could think of is proselytize. We have to preach in our own spheres of influence, whatever they might be. We have to introduce these ideas, because when people stop and they think about these things, I mean, soberly, when they purposely set aside some time and they start thinking, it would come to them that, wow, this makes sense. I am a citizen of this country or a resident in this country. I'm not without the power to change things and influence things, especially things that are so blatantly wrong. You spend all this time and money and effort in creating the propaganda that this is what people are supposed to do. Why? Because this is the very essence of democracy, that the different segments of society are functioning well, like any well-oiled machine. All the components of the machine have specific jobs to do. And the machine doesn't work if any of those components are not working well. It's the same thing here. In just 2 years, and I'm not putting all of the blame on Donald Trump, I'm using this as a guideline. It took only 2 years for this dramatic erosion to manifest itself. It's not that we didn't see things getting worse in terms of the relationship between government and society. We saw it all happening, and we saw it increasing, but there is no denying that Donald Trump created an avalanche in terms of what the average person sees as his or her future in a society like that is being run this way, and not having the ability to impact anything. We have to live instead with the impact. That's not a good thing. And we will have to think about that. Because the next question would be, do we have any reason at all, any power, any authority to point the finger of blame if we are not doing what we are supposed to do? Thanks so much for listening. We'll hook up again tomorrow. Bye-bye.